live from The Rock. Welcome to the Brown Sports Combos Podcast. My name is Samuel Ree.
My name is TJ Kim.
I'm Ethan Jobson.
My name is David Cody.
And welcome back. We had an episode discussing the NBA playoffs recorded, but there were some audio difficulties and issues. There was a metronome track that we couldn't get rid of. And that episode was scrapped, so we are very sorry about that. But we are back. We're here to discuss various different things. So let's introduce our topics through a segment we like to call The Riff, where each of us gets about 30 seconds to introduce a topic that we want to talk about from sports over the past however long. And from those topics, we will decide which ones to discuss first and go from there. So, who wants to go first?
I'll start, because guys, the most important day of the football year was yesterday, the first round of the NFL draft. And it was weird. It was certainly a weird night. The Raiders did some weird things. The Giants did some weird things. My Patriots did a very weird thing, and that was a good thing. we'll talk about that a little later. But big night, and also big night tonight.
Okay, so unfortunately, this is probably going to be our last podcast of the semester. So in preparation for summer, I wanted to talk about the Women's World Cup, which is this coming June. I think it's actually going to be really interesting, and I think there are a lot of cool storylines to talk about there.
All right, so we did talk about the NBA in our last podcast that didn't quite make it out, so I think we should definitely talk about the NBA. The second round of the playoffs is starting this weekend. Got a lot of cool matchups, so definitely look at that.
Yeah, specifically within the NBA playoffs, I want to talk about Damian Lillard and a couple of other unsung heroes from these past from this past round one. So a little bit of a retrospective from round one, I believe, is in order as well. All right. So what are we going with first? David, I know that you covered the NFL draft. You and the people on the NFL podcast talked about it. And you had did you have an article about
it? We did. So the other podcast for Brown Sports Convos called Brown 21 Set Hut. It's our all NFL podcast. We put out an episode last week where we did a mock draft, and then an article went up, sort of a recapping said mock draft. As far as mock drafts go, we were pretty good. My personal mock draft last year, I got one pick right out of the 32 in the first round. So we were better. We were better this time around.
Did you have a quarterback from noted football school Duke University going number 6?
We did not, and I don't know if anyone did.
The Giants did.
The Giants certainly did, and he even looks like Eli Manning, Daniel Jones. I don't like the pick. I think he's a guy you could have gotten later on in the draft, honestly.
Like number 17.
Like,
or so.
I don't know, around number 17. What do you guys think?
I don't think it was a great pick. Also considering that the Giants took a defensive player, a defensive lineman, with their 17th pick. and considering that at the 6th pick, they could have picked a much better defensive player. There were a couple who were on the board.
Yeah, was Josh Allen there?
Josh Allen was there. So they could have probably taken Josh Allen or another very good defensive player, and then still gotten their quarterback at 17, because I think the Redskins were taking Dwayne Haskins no matter what.
Yeah.
The Giants seem to be, in my opinion, like very stuck on this Eli Manning idea. It seems like that seems to extend even beyond the player, with Daniel Jones now being like kind of this Eli disciple that went to Peyton Manning's camp and like. Yes, kind of similar playing style. I find it interesting that the Giants seem to prize Eli Manning so much that they are willing to like base the entire future course of the franchise based on kind of like this model. I understand that he was like a very impactful player and his legacy of bringing two Super Bowls, but I just kind of think it seems like they have like blown this idea to the extreme, almost.
Also being the only quarterback to beat Tom Brady, am I correct? So, if Tom Brady is the GOAT, and Eli's the only one to have beaten Tom Brady,
yes. through transitive property, Eli Manning's the GOAT. The Giants are kind of like that dude who, like, can't break up with a girl, and then, like, when they finally do, like, their next girlfriend, like, kind of looks a lot like the girl. You know what I'm saying?
The second time around isn't as long either.
Yeah, they tried to, because they tried to bench Eli. Was that 2 seasons ago?
Yeah,
when
Geno
Smith came in?
Yeah.
And then they were like, no, wait, never mind. And they put Eli back in. Yeah, I don't understand what the Giants are doing. I mean, I do get, you like a quarterback, get your guy. Mm-hmm. I mean, don't leave that up to fate. But, gosh, at number 6. Also, a little 2 picks before that, something even worse happened.
Really?
Where the Oakland Raiders, the soon-to-be Las Vegas Raiders, picked Cleveland Farrell at number 4. Cleveland Farrell being a player who, reports say now, most teams had a second-round grade on him. Mm-hmm. And the Raiders, who had 3 first-round picks, used the number 4 overall pick on this defensive end. What do you guys think of that?
That's wild. It's so from following the NBA for a while,
yeah,
I know that the draft board seems to be a lot more fixed than it does in the NFL,
yeah,
where, like, you have people going in certain ranges, and there's not too many surprises in that regard, especially in the first round, like, first 10 picks or so.
Right.
So, like, there's a pretty clear top 5, top 10, top 3, whatever. The NFL, like, I'm, from hearing about this draft, I'm seeing a lot of really big surprises, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
Is that something, what do you think is it about the NFL that causes that to happen?
I think it's the volume of players, just the sheer amount of players in the NFL, because in the NBA, it's only 2 rounds,
mm-hmm.
and correct me if I'm wrong, but about, like, only half the guys picked end up on the roster.
In the second round, it's not a guaranteed roster.
In the second round, it's not a guaranteed. I mean, in the NFL, if you're a second round pick, you're competing for a starting job.
Mm-hmm.
So there's just the
deeper draft.
There's just a lot more players mm-hmm. within the same talent range, whereas in the NBA, there's like 10 guys who are top 10 caliber mm-hmm. who are guys who may be starters, and there's only like 2 per position. So if you have a need at a certain position, you have one of 2 choices. Where in the NFL, you saw like half the top 10 was defensive ends, and all those guys could be shuffled around. So,
yeah.
So we talked a little bit about the people who were taken too early, but there were some pretty notable like falls too, where Josh Allen didn't get taken until the Jags at 7, and Juwan Taylor, DK Metcalf fell totally out of the first round. What do you think of that?
I'm not shocked at the DK Metcalf fall. I think people get really into good combine performances and shiny objects, like good 40 times and muscles.
Crazy six packs.
Six packs. I don't think he's that talented at a receiver. He wasn't the best receiver on his team in college. AJ Brown is also still on the board.
Uh-huh.
I wasn't shocked by that. I was surprised Drew Lock fell.
Okay, yeah.
I'm surprised Drew Lock got out of the first round without getting picked. Considering Miami went up and picked, it didn't seem like any team was trying to trade back into the first round to get a quarterback like what usually happens. What do you guys think
mm-hmm.
about Drew Lock specifically? Any thoughts?
Sounds like a swimmer.
Drew does.
Yeah.
I didn't know the most about him, but I found that, like, it seemed like right before the draft, it seemed like Drew Lock, the hype around him, it kind of, like, curtailed.
Yeah.
I feel like you seem to see that a lot, where, like, these players will go through trends of being, like, up and down.
Mm-hmm.
And it almost seems like these picks are very, like, vulnerable to, like, kind of, like, these narratives that, like, happen at different times, where, like, Blake Bortles can get taken, like, higher than Teddy Bridgewater or something.
Right.
Or these ridiculous things.
Yeah.
I mean, I think in the NFL, it's sort of like there's a couple of players who are very clearly like special and mm-hmm. are definitely going to be able to come and produce day one. Kyler's one of those guys. Kyler Murray's one of those guys, I think. Nick Bosa.
Yeah.
We saw it, you know, we don't even see them every year necessarily
uh-huh.
in the first round. Like the one I can remember closest is Joey Bosa when he came in.
Yeah.
That's just fresh in my mind. You know, he negotiated his own contract rookie year and came in and just balled out. But like, it's not like the, but again, not kind of unlike the NBA, there's always a lot of really high picks that may turn out and a lot of really low picks that, that do turn out. So,
yeah.
You know, I think that, you know, again, people are willing to pull the trigger on a riskier pick or a lesser known pick.
I have a question about the draft. I have heard a lot about this guy named Kyler Murray, and I know that he was just taken number one by the Cardinals. Could you tell me a little bit about what you think about this pick? Like, is Kyler Murray going to be good? Is he too short? Are the Cardinals going to be good? Are the Cardinals bad? Where do the Cardinals play? Are they...
What are the Cardinals? Well, I really like Kyler Murray. I really like watching him play. I think he reminds me a lot of Russell Wilson. He's sort of a small, elusive quarterback. He can move around really, really well. He's very smart. He's very smart about not getting hit. And I think the size thing comes down to durability a lot. He's a small guy. But he's so, so smart about not getting hit and not taking hits he doesn't have to do, which is something that hurt RG3 or Mike Vick or a lot of those guys. Johnny Manziel. So I really do like him as a player. The pick... I don't know. They picked a quarterback in the top 10 last year. I dislike that philosophy. They look like they're going to be holding on to Josh Rosen for now.
So what value do you think they can get in a trade for Josh Rosen, considering that the writing's kind of on the wall that they need to get rid of him?
Not a whole lot. No team is going to offer them a first or a second now, because they know they have to get rid of him. So here, take this fourth round pick. Yeah, you're gonna have to trade him at some point.
Feels kind of like a car depreciating when it's out of the lot. Like, they take this guy top 10 overall, but the second that they want to get the new shinier car, then now it's like, you get like maybe a mid round flyer for the guy.
Yeah, I think there was talk about maybe them trading Rosen to the Patriots or to some other team that's kind of...
The Dolphins have been in that conversation a lot.
You know, that maybe... Well, Dolphins are going to Tannehill, but some other team that needs a QB but, like, doesn't want to pay a lot for it.
Yeah.
So that might still happen. I thought, honestly, they're going to trade the pick and keep Rosen and get the trade the first overall for a very good player. But they didn't end up doing that. So I guess we'll see.
Were there any major trades within the first round?
Who moved up? The Steelers moved up to like 10. Grabbed a defensive player, grabbed a linebacker.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised that when Josh Allen started his fall, that no one kind of like traded back, particularly the Giants, because they took a guy that, not to keep harping on that, but that you feel wasn't like a consensus like top 10 picker.
Yeah.
I'm just curious.
Yeah, I don't know. Josh Allen's slide was curious that no one moved up. And we mentioned it earlier, Drew Lock sliding, it was curious that no one moved up to snatch him. It was really interesting first round overall. Also, the 32nd pick was a very happy moment for me, because I love N'Keal Harry as a football player. I also love the New England Patriots as a football team. So when those two things came together in one moment, it was a very happy moment. Also, if you look at the article that we put up about our mock draft in the other podcast, some guy named David Cody had the Patriots picking N'Keal Harry at 32. I don't know who this guy is.
Sounds like a tool.
Sounds like a massive tool, but also kind of smart. He's probably really handsome as well and has really pretty eyes. But I'm going to take a little victory lap here for picking a Bill Belichick pick correctly.
Nice.
Speaking of victory laps.
Yeah, take
laps,
yours. You missed yours.
We haven't had a podcast in a while, but I just want to remind everyone that when everyone was singing the praises of Zion Williamson and Duke basketball team, I was the one person who was looking at the stats and looking at what made sense, looking at the data, you know, sabermetrics.
Take that for data.
Yeah. And I What do you know? Virginia wound up on top. So I just want to take the victory lap on that, yeah, too. Yeah.
Because congratulations, Ethan.
I don't usually pick brackets correctly.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, speaking of tournaments and basketball.
Yeah, let's talk about that NBA. How about them? How about them basketball?
I don't know, man. Do you want to talk about the second round?
I could talk about the second round or the first round. I think the second round is super interesting. We got some great lineup, some great matchup, especially in the East, I think. Mm-hmm. Got Bucks, Celtics, got Sixers, Raptors.
Yeah.
It's going to be a show.
As everyone in this audience already knows, and everyone here already knows, Boston Celtics fans are some of the longest-suffering fans on the planet.
Boston fans in general.
Yeah.
It really sucks.
It's been almost months since the last championship.
But I have been incredibly stressed about this upcoming Bucks-Boston matchup in the second round. Yeah, so it was sweeps for both teams. The Bucks easily took care of the Pistons, and the Celtics easily took care of the Pacers, who, to be fair, were down Victor Oladipo, but that's been the case for a little while now.
Right.
I don't know. It seems like Marcus Smart is going to continue sitting out for at least the first few games of this upcoming series. And, you know, both teams do have a little bit of rest time coming into that series, but it is fair to say that the Celtics are the underdog here.
Yeah. What do you think? Do you think the Celtics proved anything by sweeping the Pacers, by sweeping a team they were supposed to be able to sweep at the beginning of the year?
I think it just means that Kyrie Irving and Gordon Hayward are good in the playoffs. You know, they showed up, they knew what their job was, and, like, Kyrie had some good moments. Hayward showed that he could play in the flow of the team really well. And had, like, a really, really strong game three. So there were flashes there. And Al Horford, he struggled shooting a little bit, but, you know, he continued being that playmaking defensive stalwart that, like, you know, we're paying max money to. I don't know. It's concerning because we saw similar things out of the Bucks. Eric Bledsoe had a good game. Chris Middleton had a couple good games.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, Giannis is just Giannis right now. Yeah. I stand by what I said about Giannis Antetokounmpo being the best player in the league currently. And I think that's going to show up in this series. What do you guys think?
I have kind of a hot take.
What?
In 2015, the Golden State Warriors were the team that had this great regular season, but people weren't willing to buy in the playoffs yet. And people were kind of underselling, getting this talk of, I remember... hasn't aged well. Can a jump shot shooting team win in the playoffs?
Charles Barkley.
Yeah, Charles Barkley. Charles Barkley, I remember that clip.
But I think the Bucks, this might be the Bucks' time to become those Warriors, basically. I think, not exactly, but you know what I mean.
Non-jump shot shooting team.
But I think that they have, like, consistently shown that they are an elite team throughout the year, and I think they're still getting kind of, like, undervalued because... people just think...
they're not used to it.
Well, yeah, people think that they're kind of inexperienced, kind of new to this. Mm. But I think if you look at the actual results, I think that... I don't know if there's any team I can buy into more, even the Warriors, just because there's so many teams that seem to be kind of in turmoil and kind of, like, in this, like, morass of, like, they have a shot, but they have big weaknesses. And I think... the Bucks are the one team that, with Giannis, I feel like there's no obvious weakness there.
Milwaukee, to me, seems to be this apotheosis of what LeBron James teams wanted to be for the past several years, where you have this centralizing, playmaking, big forward superstar who can handle and drive into lanes and draw defensive collapses and kick it out to a bunch of three-point shooters on the edge. I think... in terms of play style, they are the most solid team in the league right now. The most fundamentally sound with a game plan that should overwhelm any opponent in their way.
Mm.
I still think Eric Bledsoe is going to have, like, some really bad moment that really hurts them. I think the same way about Brook Lopez if anyone's able to expose Brook Lopez or Hassan Ilyasova or those guys. But yes, the Bucks are really, really solid.
Don't you dare slur the name of Brook Lopez.
Well, here's the thing about the Bucks to me is that they're an elite team. They're a great team. What there's one thing they are not, however, and that's a super team.
Hey.
Yeah.
You know, there's been a lot of talk in the recent years in the NBA about super teams, right? You know, the Warriors and KD were the first one that kicked all this talk up. But, you know, there's been the Thunder, the Rockets, sort of, with Chris Paul. Even the Celtics were talked about as a super team for a bit. And I think that the Bucks, if they do well, they can really prove that you don't need to get flashy, expensive, big-name free agents or, you know, blockbuster trades in order to, you know, construct a great team. Mm-hmm. You can have a good system, you know, one or two just really excellent players. You know, they've had Giannis since, like, forever. He's loyal to them. They got Bledsoe basically because another team just didn't want him anymore.
No, he didn't want to be there.
Yeah.
Anymore.
This is true. You know, it's like, I think that's part of the reason why a lot of people aren't respecting the Bucks as much, because they don't have these big, flashy, sexy, you know, players. But
Giannis is a big, flashy, sexy player.
But it's almost like a foregone conclusion these days that if you want to compete, you have to have two, three. You have to have a really expensive free agent on your team, something like that. Yeah. And I think it would be great, I think, if the Bucks could prove that you don't need to do that.
Yeah, and let's not forget that's how the Warriors came up as an elite team as well. They didn't. Steph and Klay and Draymond came up through their system. They weren't really a super team until they signed Kevin Durant. Yeah. They were already two finals deep, I think, right? In their run. So, yeah, I think the super team trope is a little bit overblown.
Yeah. A common sentiment shared among analytics people on NBA Twitter is that the biggest free agent that the Bucks signed this past offseason is Mike Budenholzer, who I think should be the coach of the year. Mm-hmm. Having revamped the style, playing a little bit of, you know, what we saw from the 60-win Hawks a couple of years ago. Mm. But centralized around Giannis Antetokounmpo, who is a very, very centralizing player. That you can play around, that you can build around, that defenses have to take care of somehow, have to have some kind of game plan for. Even if that game plan is, let's let him shoot however many twos he wants and just block off all the three-point shooters. So, I don't know. The Bucks are a worrisome team if you're a Celtics fan, and if they make it to the finals, like, I really want to see Giannis matched up against Kevin Durant, so
that's going to be fun to watch.
But are the Warriors even going to make it to the finals?
Yeah, let's talk about this series.
Okay, so the best team in Los Angeles right now, the Los Angeles Clippers, are currently...
It's just a fact, though. It's like it's not even debatable.
Yeah, it's true.
They've been giving the Warriors what one might call a little bit of a rough time. The Warriors went up 3-1, which, as we know, no one thinks that's safe anymore.
That's actually a negative.
Yeah. And Lou Williams had the game of his life in game 5, bringing it back from the brink, and in the fourth quarter had some Isaiah Thomas from 2016 level heroics, bringing the Clippers to 3-2. We're going to game 6 in Los Angeles right now. Guys, how are you feeling about this series?
I mean, I think the Warriors will make it through this series, but I think that it definitely spells trouble for them in the future. Not to, like, keep going on about this college basketball comparison, but the kind of way, like, the UCF game felt for Duke, I feel that the Warriors have been teetering on this edge where they have this, like, deteriorating team chemistry that almost came back to bite them last year, and it feels like it has, if anything, only gotten worse this year. And it feels like they are just kind of coasting on this reputation and the fear they put into other teams, as well as they are a very good team. But I feel that a collapse feels like it could be imminent for them soon.
Can we agree that one way or another, this sort of feels like the end of an era for them?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, a whole, what was it, like 1-2 years of this era? Or, I mean, I don't know if I could call it
an era. The boogie
era.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Well, here's the thing. The Warriors, there's a lot of ego on that team. Mm. I think there's probably the most ego on that team of any team in the NBA. And I think Steve Kerr is an incredible coach. People don't give him enough credit for the Warriors' success. He's been able to manage the ego and the drama and sort of all the shenanigans that go on with having a team like the Warriors and been able to get them to continue to play winning basketball. You know, I think because he's been there, he knows what it's like to be on an elite team with a lot of really good players.
Yeah.
And he also just kind of is good at, I think, managing people.
Yeah.
And, but on the other hand, there's only so much a person can do when you've got five all-star caliber players, a couple of whom are not known for their, you know, their people skills, I'll say.
Yeah.
And I think at some point, someone's got to go. Something's got to give.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be mad if the Warriors just kind of went back to basics and sort of let KD walk soon.
Yeah.
You know, Boogie, if he can reinvent himself into kind of a role player and or, you know, not the superstar that he was in New Orleans, then maybe they can keep him. But I really think they should just kind of stick with what made them great in the first place and not try to do all other crazy stuff.
Yeah, speaking of Boogie, that season-ending injury does not help their depth at all in terms of their size. You know, even if they make it deep, I think that injuries are going to be a concern for them going forward, as they have been for multiple years now.
All right, guys.
To digress just a little bit.
Hang on.
Yeah.
One sec. Ahead. Prepare yourselves. I think the Clippers are going to win this series. This is my opinion. This is not based on any statistical grounds or any actual basketball knowledge. I just feel it.
I think the Clippers are, we all want it.
In my thighs. I think the Clippers are going to win this series.
Is this their audition tape for Kevin Durant?
This is maybe. I think they're a really attractive option for free agents.
They should be.
I think them in Brooklyn are going to absolutely get a big free agent.
They should. Like, I feel like they deserve one.
Yeah,
one
if you're Kevin Durant, how is Los Angeles and Brooklyn not the top two?
And how are they not?
And how are they not?
They're definitely more attractive than the Knicks. That's all I'm gonna say right now.
And more attractive than the Lakers.
Ooh, yeah. You missed Sam's Lakers rant from the unrecorded podcast. It was magical. It's sad to be lost to history.
More magical than Magic Johnson's career with the Lakers.
His front office career.
Yeah.
Be careful here.
I can't deny that if we're going from a sports superstition standpoint, Kevin Durant blowing a 31-point lead, then blowing a 3-1-point lead, and the Warriors blowing a 3-1 lead and a 31-point lead, and then Kevin Durant going to the team that he lost to would be probably the most logical thing in the mystical sports universe.
Yeah. I kind of feel like the only thing standing in the way of that is the fact that he's hyper aware of what the memes surrounding him.
Of course.
Yeah.
Never-ending memes.
But,
gosh.
Let's pretend that we live in a timeline where the Clippers end up winning this series.
We do.
In seven.
I'm telling you.
I watched Avengers Endgame last night.
Oh, I saw too.
Okay. Oh, cool. I'm gonna try to avoid spoilers, but in terms of the way that it makes me feel, it makes me feel the same way that I feel about this Clippers Warriors series. If the Clippers end up winning the series, I think it's. Wow, what a way to go out, you know? And, like, people who watched Endgame, I think, would understand that feeling. But, like, is this really the way that the Warriors dynasty is going to end? Their dynasty, quote-unquote?
Getting knocked out in the first round by a team with no star.
To the Clippers, no star.
The eighth seed.
They were up 3-1 in game four.
I would love that. Imagine the 30 for 30.
Oh my god. The SB Nation has this series going on called The Collapse.
I've been seeing that. I've actually really liked it.
It's very good.
Yeah, they talk about how there's these like high peaks for certain teams and then it all sort of collapses. And wow, what a collapse this would be.
Look, I think we're looking at a collapse after this season anyway because Klay looks like he's on his way out. I just get that sense.
Really?
I do get that sense. And Kevin Durant really looks like he's on his way out.
I believe that.
I don't think Boogie's going to be able to... After the amount of injuries he's had, I don't think he's going to be able to fill any kind of hole that you could reasonably want after losing a Clay or a KD. Yeah, I think they're just going to have to lean on Steph a lot, and they're not going to be nearly as dominant, and then things are just going to start to kind of roll off.
I hate to get into these, like, kind of sports cliches, but I think it really depends on how much these Warriors, like, really want another championship. Mm. I think, like, if, in terms of, like, are they really going to let themselves, like, lose in the first round to, like, this unheralded Clippers team? Right. I think, I'm not sure that, like, KD really cares that much about getting another ring with these Warriors team. I'm wondering if he might even feel that if he lost with this Warriors team, it might kind of justify, like, moving on.
Leaving.
But I can't know his mindset, so.
Yeah, here's the thing. We say all this, but it's the Warriors series to lose. And I mean that every sense of the term. If they lose Game 6, not if the Clippers win Game 6,
right.
If the Warriors lose Game 6, if they lose Game 7 at home in Oakland, if they go on to the second round, third round, end up going to the finals, I still feel like they are the ones who are going to bear the responsibility of whatever happens because they are the favorites in whatever scenario that they're in. Mm-hmm. It's on them. And to some extent, that reveals how we feel about the Warriors still internally.
Mm-hmm.
That we feel like they can beat anyone as long as they show up to those games and, like, they actually try. Yeah, I think that's a tough position for anyone to be in, but I also feel like that reveals what we feel about this team right now.
Speaking of favorites in the tournament and tough positions, I really want to talk about this Women's World Cup. So, as always, the U.S. women's team is number one in the world, I believe, right now, and they're the favorite. But they don't seem to be quite the dominating force they once were. They're in a group with Sweden, and Sweden, when they played in the quarterfinal of the Olympics, actually came out on top of the U.S. They play each other, like, a lot, like one of the most of any two countries. They know each other very well. There are also a lot of other really good teams that... France is hosting the tournament. They're like a top five team in the world. They beat the U.S. quite handily the last friendly they played. And the U.S., if you look at their recent match results, they have had a pretty good run in terms of their last few friendlies in terms of the actual results. But they haven't really dominated any of the teams, even some of these kind of more mediocre-ish competition. So, I don't know. Do you want to talk about this?
Yeah, the Women's World Cup is always interesting because it's very different from the Men's Cup. The teams that are
good
are different.
America's good.
Yeah, America is good.
America actually qualifies.
Interesting because North America and Asia tend to be put forth some very good teams in the
World
Cup. Japan's really good. China has been good in the past. They're not in the tournament this year, I don't think. But Canada is good. The U.S. is good, which is really interesting. And you know, the European team, they're still good, but, like, South America's, you know, it's not a shoo-in that South America and Europe, or really Europe, are going to take it.
Yeah.
And I think there's a lot more parity, it's a lot more interesting. I mean, anyway, no, China is in the tournament, so my bad.
I feel like it seems like lately in women's soccer that in the international sphere that it seems like Europe is thought of as kind of like becoming more at the level of these North American and Asian teams with, I think the gold and silver medalists were European in 2016, Germany and Sweden. And now France is kind of like the sexy, like, upset pick since they have home field.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, home field advantage in the World Cup is definitely important. You know, it could take a team really, really far. I mean, we've seen that time and again in the Cup. But, you know, I think that ultimately the best team will prevail. And you know, if the U.S. wouldn't win, I think it would be a surprise. They're definitely, you know, even if they're not the number one, like, overall seed in the tournament, I think they're, you know, they're still the favorite. They're still the U.S. women's national team. You know, how many cups have they won? Like,
I do think you might see a lot of motivation on their part. Remember, in 2011, they were upset by Japan in the Women's World Cup final,
and
it seemed like they really came out in the 2012 with, and also to a lesser extent, 2015 with, like, a mission to, like, undo that error. And I think that will be impactful. I do think you can't undersell home field, though. With, like, the last time France played a friendly in France against the U.S., they won 3-1, and the U.S.'s only goal was, like, near the end of the match. So I'm not sure that I would say that the U.S. is probably the most likely to win of any, like, out of, if I had to pick one team to win it, I think I'd say the U.S., but I think I'd pick the field over the U.S. just because even, it's not even just France. There's Sweden. There's Japan still has a pretty good team. Germany still has a pretty good team. I think the landscape of women's soccer is becoming more less of this, like, these powers on top and becoming more diversified.
Yeah. Honestly, I think in many ways the women's game is more interesting than the men's game. Because, you know, I mean, one, there are fewer, I mean, there aren't these, like, the women's, I think U.S. women's team has some superstars.
Yeah.
But there aren't, you know, there's not people who you just want to see, who are just going to dominate and can single-handedly carry a team by themselves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even the U.S. team has many players who are extremely good, not just one. And I also think that, again, there's this almost this dynastic aspect to the men's game where it's kind of like, you know, you shall pay your due diligence to the Brazilians and the Germans, and you shall worship them as the god of soccer, and then, you know, if something else happens, it is considered, like, against, like, the righteous path of the soccer universe, whereas I think in the women's game, it's really much more open. It's like, anything can happen, let's just compete, and, you know, the best team will really win.
Whatever the case may be, I will be rooting for the women's soccer team in the World Cup because I have more or less always associated American soccer, U.S. soccer, with the women's team due to, like, the fact that they are fun to watch.
And they're good.
And they're good. It would be sad for me to see the women's team fall in the upcoming tournament. I think that it's really cool that not only, like, is an American soccer team good, but that the fact that it is, like, one of the only sports in the U.S. where, like, we do associate women with it more powerfully than men, you know, with a lot of controversy surrounding the WNBA right now, honestly, and it's the fans, NBA fans' relationship with it.
I'm just really excited for a good tournament in general. I think there's a lot of cool stuff happening this summer, you know. Stranger Things 3, I'm really pumped for that. Yeah, but I think it's really nice that to have kind of summer can be kind of like a downtime for sports. Where I think it's really nice to have this, like, really fun thing and to profile women's athletes, and hopefully it'll be a really entertaining tournament.
I hope we see some awesome moments.
Yeah.
All right. Do you guys want to move on to the 2 cent finish?
Sure.
I am ready.
All right, so to introduce the 2 cent finish, this is our ending segment where each of us gets about some time, some allotment of time, to sort of rant, discuss with ourselves, monologue, soliloquy about a topic in sports that we care about from this past period of time since the last time we recorded a podcast. Who wants to go first?
All right, I'm going to go. My 2 cent finish for this week has to do with the NBA again. I think that there is one player in the tournament who no one has talked about, who needs to be talked about, and who will have an incredible game, if not games, in this tournament. And that is Jeremy Lin of the Toronto Raptors. I don't know if anyone follows his Instagram, but he does nothing but work hard and support his teammates. And I think that he will break out and have at least one incredible game in these playoffs. He's got the cast around him to do it, and I cannot wait to see.
As a Nets fan, seeing Jeremy Lin roast the 76ers right now would be very gratifying to me.
On multiple levels for me as well. Anyone else?
Okay, so just one last thing on the Women's World Cup. I'd be remiss if I didn't mention that, but to back up, my dad is Jamaican, and Jamaica, they have had some really great athletes come out. You know, they're great at track and field. But in terms of soccer, they have not really been on the par of kind of the top level in the world. And kind of, especially with the men's, there's been kind of a lot of disappointment. But the Jamaica women's team has qualified for their first ever Women's World Cup. So I just want to give a shout out to them. I really can't wait to see them on the world stage, and I really hope they do well.
All right. This is Brown Sports Convos. So I do want to talk about a brown sport. Specifically, I don't know how much. I don't talk about this very often. I'm an ultimate frisbee player myself.
Nice.
I play for the men's B team, Polyester Funkadelic. Shout out P Funk. Brown has a very good ultimate frisbee program. I don't know how many people are aware of this. Our men's A team, Brownie in Motion, is the number two ranked ultimate frisbee team in the country. Earlier this year, they won Easterns, which is a big nationwide frisbee tournament. They beat the number one team, UNC. They beat the number three team, UNC Carleton, en route to winning that tournament. Brown right now has definitely the best sophomore class in the country. Guys like John Randolph, Dylan Villeneuve, just outstanding players. Mac Hecht, a senior, is one of the best handlers in the country, if not the best handler in the country. I really think Brown has a really, really good chance of bringing home a national championship in ultimate frisbee this year. The women's A team is very good. They're running with some of the best teams out there. They played well against Dartmouth, who's the number one team. Just the whole ultimate program is just balling out right now. My B team's about to play regionals next weekend. Gonna kick some butt. Yeah. Go Brown.
All right, go Bruno.
Yeah, good luck. Woot.
I don't know. What should I talk about? I guess the one thing that I love in sports that I haven't been able to talk about for a little bit is Nikola Jokic.
Yeah.
Who just had the game of his life. Scored like 43 points, which is his playoff career high. Fair, considering that he just got into the playoffs, and like 13 rebounds, a bunch of assists. But the thing about the Denver-San Antonio series is that it all kind of feels kind of pointless to me right now. They're going to Game 7, and I feel as though whoever wins isn't going to win the second round anyway. And that's kind of a tough place to be in as a big Jokic fan, because I am seeing that he does do well under pressure, and that's really cool to see. I think that he is a leader, and that he brings his teammates up around him. But geez, I just want him to like succeed at a really high level, and that's not happening this year, unfortunately.
You might get Jokic Lillard second round.
Damian Lillard is on fire right now. Did anyone else like? I know that the entire internet saw
that. My phone was blowing up when that happened.
That was the coldest thing I've ever seen.
I haven't cared about the Blazers ever. Like, Brandon Roy was the last time that I looked at the Blazers and I was like, wow, that's a fun team that I can get behind. Damian Lillard has proven me wrong again and again. And he's had moments in the playoffs before, but it's only now that I kind of feel like he has taken a step up. And, you know, I always said that the more you say someone is underrated, the less underrated they are. And Damian Lillard was one of those players for a really long time. Everyone's like, he is the most underrated player in the league right now. And I'm like, well, you've said it so much, I don't think he's underrated anymore. But I actually think that he has ascended a tier of point guardhood to, like, maybe on Steph Curry's level in terms of where I would rank him right now, at least on Kyrie's level. I really think he has the ability to swing games by himself in the playoffs right now. And that's something really, really special.
Yeah, I think with the Blazers, I used to always think about them as the pre-this year Raptors of the West. Yeah. In that regular season success and postseason not success. But I think they might see that change this year.
If they make it to the conference finals, I think we're going to see something crazy out of Damian Lillard. I don't know what it's going to be, but we're going to see something crazy. Mm-hmm. But anyway, that's the end of that podcast episode. Thank you guys so much for listening. Thank you guys for being here. Brown Sports Convos is online, sportsconvos.com, on Twitter, at BRN Sports Convos. That's at BRN Sports Convos. You can catch many of us. You guys want to plug your Twitters?
I'm all good, dude.
All right.
No one needs to read my Twitter.
We're all plugged out. But thank you all so much for listening. I hope you guys have a fantastic spring weekend experience. And if we don't, if you don't hear from us again before the end of the semester, this has been a great semester. Thank you all so much for working with us, listening to us. Thanks to all the guys in the booth. And I guess we'll see you next year.
All right. Can't move it indoors because there's too many people.
Yeah, exactly. When I saw the weather report today, I'm like, wow, they really screwed up.
Yeah. All right, I'm pressing record. So, I don't want to touch anything. So we're recording so we can just start.
I feel like
we can,
like, even if they do pull it off, it's still going to be kind of lame.
Well, he's lame. I'm excited for Mitski. And what else do we really
Mitski?
Need?
Mitski?
Yeah.
She's like, okay, I had to listen to, like, pretty much any of the people before the lineup came out. But,
yeah, I didn't either. Yeah, and then I found... It's so funny that, like, Daniel Caesar was probably, like, the most prominent on the platform. And the day after they released the lineup, then he was, like, canceled for saying, like, some, like...
Black people gotta be polite. Yeah.
Wait, did he say that?
Yes, like, it was literally, that's like, kinda, the day that they announced the lineup.
That's so fucked up.
Well, he was basically saying... Black people shouldn't be so mean to white people or else they won't want to be nice to them.
That's my favorite. That's, you know, that's social justice.
Yeah. Wow. Honestly, that's racial equality right there.
And that's equality.
Yeah.
A true visionary.
Japanese Denim is a damn good song, though.
Yeah. Wait, I listened to, like, Daniel's, like, the new album. Literally all the songs sound the same.
Hey.
They all sound the same.
Hey. That's a hard criticism. For musicians, they hate that shit.
Yeah. All right.
And then I don't know.
It's just, Amine, like, is
so much,
sick.
There's so
I love
much
Amine.
Sad music. I don't know. I don't like it.
Hey, I like sad music.
I need some sad music.
I kind of wish they had sad music at a concert. I want to listen to
hype
music.
Last year they had Dram. Yeah, we needed like one
Dram.
Hype. We need one hype. All right,
let's try and like get close to the mics.
Yeah.
Dude, Broccoli, I've gone so lit to that.
Yeah.
All right, you guys ready?
Yeah.
Wait, we're gonna riff. So we're gonna go around and pick topics.
All right, cool.